Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Wonder who
wrote the book of love?
Tell me.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation, and today we're really going to do open mic to mic because it's your show. You can call on any topic, whether it be the scandals of Cronygate, the scandal of General Electric not paying any taxes, the scandal of Solyndra, the scandal of the attempts to throttle an Air Force general who stood in the way of Lights Squared. It's one thing after another. We become a banana republic under Obama. Only most of you, I would say most of you know how bad and corrupt this administration is. But the majority of America, I'm sorry to tell you, does not know. I'd like to make this an open mic to Mike show, but I'm going to start with the General Electric scandal. GE responds to charges of crony capitalism by Timothy Carney, senior political columnist for Beltway Confidential. When it came to 2010, GE's tax bill was $0. They paid nothing. General Electric, with a larger lobbying budget than any other company in America, has long lobbied for and profited from big government. Since Obama tapped GE CEO Jeffrey Immelt's job czar, this is one of the most ironic things I've ever seen in my life. The man exports jobs to China, and he works for Obama as the job czar. GE's corporate income tax bill for 2010, $0. Now left and right is finally attacking them. Even Newt Gingrich attacked GE for profiting from Obama-style green energy loopholes, and I said, congratulations, Newt, and I'm not a big fan of Newt Gingrich. GE responded saying, there's been a lot of talk lately about GE and what some call crony capitalism. Unfortunately, those same people don't want the facts to get in the way of their political rhetoric. So let's look at the facts. Let me go to one piece of this story that made my hair stand up today. Do you know who the lobbyists are for General Electric? You're never going to believe this. One of them includes former Senator Trent Lott. Trent Lott was the phony Republican who called for the fairness doctrine when he was still a senator. Do you remember him? Remember Trent Lott? Many of you were fooled into thinking he was actually on your side. He's a lobbyist for General Electric. Who else? Dick Gephardt, lobbyist for General Electric. Who else? Linda Daschle, whose husband Tom was the Senate Majority Leader and today is a confidant of Obama, another lobbyist. Immelt has hired all of these people like marionettes to run around amongst their old colleagues and to get them to do favors for General Electric. And they say, nevertheless, that there is no special treatment. What about last year only 4% of our revenue came from sales to the U.S. government, says Immelt. Is that true or false? They said that only 4% of their revenue came from sales to the U.S. government last year. Is that true? Well, here's what the writer says. GE is a top beneficiary of export-import bank subsidies. GE launched an embryonic stem cell business just after Obama announced the government would start subsidizing them. GE owns half of Greenhouse Gas Services, a business that generates and trades in greenhouse gas credits. GE is a leading manufacturer of wind turbines, which receives all sorts of federal and state subsidies. GE lobbied in for and benefits from the light bulb efficiency regulations that drive consumers to more expensive light bulbs. I can go on and on. GE got $140 billion in a bailout from the FDIC in 2008. This is not crony capitalism. In my opinion, Jeffrey Immelt should be indicted. I'll say that again. I believe Jeffrey Immelt should be indicted for some of these charges and be forced to testify before the American people. They also own, incidentally, that salacious, verminous channel MSNBC, which is nothing but an outlet for the Obama administration day and night. They hire crackpots. They hire degenerates. They hire anti-American fools of the lowest level. And they put them on MSNBC. They don't care whether that channel makes any money, because it doesn't. It loses money. But it's an arm, a propaganda arm of the Democrat machine, which funds Immelt. Don't you understand how this works? I've said my piece. Read the article. I found it today. I put it up on michaelsavage.com from Beltway Confidential. Great article. GE responds to charges of crony capitalism. It's an eye-opener to see that Trent Lott is a lobbyist for General Electric. This is the same Trent Lott, Mr. Nice Guy Trent Lott, who came out for the Fairness Doctrine when he was a Republican senator, and I talked about it on the show. I was shocked. But now I know why he wanted the Fairness Doctrine along with Dianne Feinstein. He wanted the Fairness Doctrine to shut us up, to make sure they can continue to roll us over like a steamroller on an asphalt highway in August in the Catskill Mountains. Now it's your show. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com for this and other stories. Any topic is fair game. Let's begin in New York with Bill on WOR. Bill, go ahead, please.
Yes, I was at Barnes & Noble looking for your book, and they had it displayed in the 20% discount pile, but it was under Brad Thor's book, but it wasn't upright. You couldn't see it. So when you looked at it, it looked like it was his book.
I never heard of Brad Thor. I don't know who he is, but the fact is my book is in Barnes & Noble, so I'd like all of my listeners to go into Barnes & Noble tonight and put my book on top of Brad Thor's books. How's that?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, pick up. I have more listeners than he has listeners, so let's put out the Savage Army. Go into the bookstores and make sure my book is displayed, that's all. I'll send you a free copy for tipping us off. Is that illegal, what I just said? You know, we can fight fire with fire. I have a Savage Army out there. Why don't you go and do something? Don't buy the book if you don't want. Just make sure someone else does. It is Friday. It's Open Mic to Mike Friday. I have many, many wonderful callers out there. I do. I have very good callers. Here's another one out of Chicago. Gary, you're up on the air. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, in the Middle East this year, we've seen riots and turmoil. I don't think the big picture is escaping what's going on right now. Gaddafi got pulled out. Mubarak got pulled out. All these other dictators got pulled out. Why? Because they were not complicit into World War III. All of this.
Wait, they would not what?
They would not start World War III with Israel. That's why.
Well, yeah. Mubarak was an ally of America. Mubarak made peace with Israel, which is why Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, and the other anti-Semitic fascists in the Democrat Party threw Mubarak to the wolves, because they wanted to install the Muslim Brotherhood to destroy Israel. In that regard, I agree with you.
Exactly. But it wasn't just Mubarak. It was Gaddafi.
That's correct. That's right. George Soros is behind all of it. George Soros is on record as saying Israel's the stumbling block in the world. George Soros is engineering most of this. You don't know this. Now, people say, how could that be, since he's allegedly Jewish and allegedly survived the Holocaust? How can you even say that? Well, you have to understand an awful lot about an awful lot to understand that's possible.
I understand. And what I'm going to be one of the ones who says this right now. They are trying to establish another Islamic caliphate, because this goes back to what Albert Pike said, a 33rd degree Freemason. He said the third world war will have to consist of the Zionist faction and the Islamists killing each other, mutually destroying each other. And that's why they're removing Gaddafi. That's why they removed Mubarak, because those people did not want to start war with Israel. And now we're in the final stages of the New World Order.
Well, there's an awful lot of hearsay in what you're saying. What do you mean by the New World Order? I mean, we all use the phrase. We've been living in the New World Order since World War I. What is the New World Order at the end of the day? When you say New World Order, you're stating it as though it hasn't existed and is about to come down on us. We're living in it. We've been living in a New World Order since the end of World War I.
End of the day, a new world order will consist of a one world government.
That's correct. See, now, the new world order under George Soros as master controller of the universe is being laid down every day. In fact, George Soros is quoted as saying there should be one central European bank. He said this 2 days ago. He wants a single bank for all of Europe. Now, take a guess why he wants a single bank for all of Europe. Because Soros is quoted in the same way as Rothschild was. The senior Rothschild, who lent money to Napoleon, during the French Revolution. To Napoleon, pardon me. The senior Rothschild of the banking family said, don't give me control of a nation, just give me control of their currency and I'll control that nation. George Soros is the Rothschild of our time, and he would do anything for increasing his power, including crushing an entire nation, breaking the borders open like a cell. This man has absolutely no scruples, in my opinion. I believe he's the most evil man in the history of this planet.
So believe he said, I not care who makes
I believe he's the most diabolical man in my lifetime. I believe this man has more strings attached to more politicians and more so-called journalists than any man in the history of this country. Thanks for the call. What else do you want to talk about? Something lightweight? Something easy? No one even knows who he is. How about for a comic relief, we play my favorite illiterate senator, Senator Bernie Sanders, really from Brooklyn, but he pretends to be from Vermont where he got elected. He went up to Vermont and infected them with his socialist rhetoric. And he goes out every day and attacking people who make a living and is always worried about the poor, when in fact, you know, he doesn't mean a word of it. Listen to clip 28.
Right-wing extremists believe that what society is about is allowing the big money interest and the wealthy to have all kinds of power, all kinds of privileges. But if you're in the middle class or if you're working person...
What are you whispering for, Bernie? What's the whisper? What'd you get it for? Shut up. Just shut up. Go back to your oilcloth existence, will you? Go back to the Brooklyn where the ILGW people infected your mind. What do you mean right-wing extremists want the wealthy and big business to have all the power? You mean like Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric? You mean like all the people who were at Martha's Vineyard when your friend Obama was there? Who the hell do you think you're fooling, you? Fraud, you! You fraud! Go back to Brooklyn where you came from. I'll be right back before I get mad.
Savage.
Well, she's the gal in the red blue jeans. She's the queen of all the teens. She's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so. Say, Bebopalula, she's my baby.
Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Open for the Savage Nation. We are sending out a coded song to the millions of Savage listeners. There is a secret message in this song. You have to take the third letter of the first word of the eighth symbol and convert that into Russian in order to understand the message I am sending. The left is so paranoid in this country, they can believe it. Come in, Berlin. Berlin. It's an old joke on the Savage Nation. So we're telling you General Emetic, they're calling GE General Emetic, makes about the worst products in America. People who work there are telling us that they make products to break just as soon as the warranty runs out. People are writing letters saying that GE products used to be standouts. Now they're manufactured just to be GE, good enough to last until the warranty expires. And it's astounding to see what's going on in this country under Jeff Immelt, and how this country has gone into the corporate welfare sow hall of fame. It is astounding, the connection between General Electric and Obama. The government media complex has never been more cozily attached than General Electric, NBC, and MSNBC, which should be prohibited, by the way. See, if you lived in a free country, you would not permit a corporation that's so closely tied to government contracts to own news outlets, would you? All right, what's the difference? You know, what's the difference? You understand the danger we're in. We're all waiting for somebody to come along, coalesce all of us, put the bad guys in jail, and save America. I don't think it could happen. I don't know who that person is. But we all dream it. I know what we dream. We collectively dream of someone coming along to take evildoers like this, villains like this, indict them, try them, give them a fair trial, break up their companies the way Rockefeller's a company was broken up, and save America from this. But I don't know that this could happen anymore. Chicago, Florentine, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I wanted to ask how you see the United States of America 50 years from now, say in the year 2060 or so, as far as economy, education, social identity, military presence, things of that sort.
I would say we'll be a close approximation to what Mexico is today, where a small band of very wealthy people run the country, own the country, live behind secure gates, and gangs basically run the country. The police are either corrupted or killed. The people live in fear of their lives. There are no guns permitted so that the people can be completely controlled and manipulated. And the people are largely drugged by pharmaceuticals and by illicit drugs. But other than that, I think it's a very rosy future for the country.
Yeah, I got a suggestion for you. Why don't you write a novel about this, like a fiction, like an imaginary? I think that would sell really well if you sat down and imagine the United States in the years.
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not an H.G. Wells, you know, and I think it's too depressing. I think Jack Hatfield, who will live in another novel, is not going to be worried about what the world will look like in 50 years. He's going to be racing to save America from something else in the next incarnation of the next book. Incidentally, I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power right now, incidentally. Madeline in Chicago, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Tell you about an experience I had at Barnes & Noble Tuesday night when I went to buy your book. I walked into the store, and first of all, I thought it might be in the window. You know how they put books in the window? Okay, so it wasn't there. So I went in and had to ask after I looked around and couldn't find it. Three people couldn't find it. They had to look it up on the card catalog. Finally, one bimbo woman said, "Oh, here it is," and it was all the way at the bottom. She had to pull it out. It was like on the bottom shelf.
Yeah, well, you see, they're violating the rules of the corporate headquarters because I happen to know my publisher paid for upfront promotion, meaning the book gets put in the front of the store for the first day of publication, which was Tuesday. So those clerks did this in order to make sure that no one bought my book.
Oh, I know, but I made a big stink about it, and I know a lot of people heard me, and I said, that book is a bestseller, and it
needs to be... Good for you. You see, if there were more women like you, I have 38 Savage Women listeners amongst my 8 million men, white male, right-wing conservative nuts. There are 38 women who listen to me. If all 38 women went out to all 50 states, think of the difference you could make. Madeline, I'm pulling your leg. It's women like you who are saving America. I'm going to send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. We have all sorts of open mic questions today. Again, I'm giving out free copies of Abuse of Power. If you really push me hard, I may even read from the book a page or two, some of these scenes without giving away the plot. And as we sit here, the movies are bidding for the book.
Savage.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like to wake up and ride.
So America is in the throes of a banana republic kind of corruption, crony capitalism of the lowest order, unlike any I've ever seen in my lifetime. Of course, there's always been favors done, and of course, the wheels of Congress are greased with money. We all know that. We know that's how the process works. But the magnitude of the corruption and the extent of the corruption, I have never seen anything approaching what Obama has inflicted upon this country. Never. And the only reason he gets away with it, you well know why, is because the media is in bed with him. In fact, he owns a good portion of the media through General Electric, NBC. If you say, well, NBC is not that important, you don't know what you're talking about. It's one of the big three networks. It's one of the three cable networks. God knows what else they own and control in the media. Now, coupled with that, Soros is buying of journalists as though they're simply marionettes in his playground, and you understand how they get away with it. And that is why we need to take the callers on the Savage Nation. Chicago, Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Michael. I just wonder what made you kind of choosing that lady, a Muslim lady, to be a hero.
You mean why did I choose one of the heroes in Abuse of Power to be a Muslim woman?
Yes, I hope it wasn't just because of affirmative action ideas.
Okay, first of all, have you read the book?
No.
Okay. Let me say this. The reason... The hero is Jack Hatfield. The second male hero is Tony Antonori. One of the heroes is a Muslim woman named Sarah Gadon. And the reason is because she, as I wrote it, lost her brother to an Al-Qaeda offshoot in Yemen. They killed her brother. And so she works against them with Jack. You know and I know that not all Muslims are terrorists. You know that to be true.
Yes, I am from one of those countries, even though I am not Muslim. Yes, I do know.
Okay, so I think it's very fair to portray Sarah as a hero, and to show that there's a cooperative effort between, for example, in the real world, between the U.S. military and moderate Muslims. I mean, let's start with the king of Jordan. King Abdullah of Jordan is one of our greatest allies in the Middle East. I'm surprised he hasn't been overthrown by Brzezinski and Carter.
They just have really short hands by now.
Yeah, I'm sure that they're lining him up for an overthrow, and the king of Saudi Arabia, too, will be overthrown by Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, and Obama. That's what I see coming. But I'm going to send you a copy of the book. You'll see that Sarah's a very believable character. And I didn't do it to pander. I think it's realistic, incidentally. What else do you want to talk about? Many topics. I don't want to get too heavy on a Friday, because if you do, it's boring, right? I mean, Isaiah once again came to mind, I write. They come from a far country, from the end of heaven, to destroy the whole earth. I sprinkle a few biblical phrases, maybe five through the whole book, you know. I don't know whether to read you the book, or I don't know what to read for you today. I don't know what to talk about on the show. I'm very tired. It's Friday. And I don't want to get overly, worked up. All right, I'll tell you what. I'm going to read a page or two from Abuse of Power, because it's good. So Jack Hatfield is the lead character. You know what happened to him. He's smeared by a Soros-like group. Some people say it's Soros-related. I say not. It's all fiction. Nothing to do with George Soros. There's no Soros-like character in the book. So he lives on a boat with his dog, but he also has a secret apartment. And here it is, page 116, Abuse of Power. Jack thought of his apartment on Union Street as his fortress of solitude. The only people who knew he owned it were his real estate broker, the bank, and his former wife, and he wanted to keep it that way. He hadn't even told Tony where it was. Jack kept it separate from his everyday life, a place where he could seek refuge to reflect and reminisce. A 22-story 60s-era complex right off the Embarcadero. It was just a block from the bay. The beauty of the building was that there were four or five entrances and exits on various floors, and he sometimes marveled at how difficult it would be for any of the progressives who had threatened him over the years to stalk him here. You could elude a rampaging army in this place. He inwardly thought of the complex as a mini-UN. It was populated by a variety of people of various nationalities, and riding the elevator to the 21st floor was often an education in cultural diversity. One day he'd be smiling and winking at a Norwegian child in a stroller, and the next he'd be chatting with a businessman from Tokyo. The view from his window was spectacular. Facing north, it looked out across the bay, and just beyond the Richmond Bridge, you could see the East Brother Light Station, a small island lighthouse that had been in operation for over 133 years. Jack had spent part of his honeymoon in that island, staying at the bed and breakfast there, and while he had found the place charming, Rachel had complained that they were too isolated to have any fun beyond the bedroom, that is. Jack loved and could enjoy the birds, the bay, even the winds. That contrast in their attitudes was one of the many reasons they were no longer married. As with many marriages, Jack and Rachel stopped sleeping together years before the sex stopped. They had side-by-side separate beds, and later they slept in separate bedrooms. He liked to watch movies on TV. She liked to read. He went to bed early. She read until after midnight. He got up at first light. She slept until 11. He was obsessed with politics and TV news. She found this too predictable. "What's the point of you getting excited?" Rachel used to say to him. "They're all liars, and you can't change a damn thing." The sex between them had been great for years, endless and heated. But Jack wasn't made for marriage. It was a strain on his nature. He couldn't conform to another person's needs and wants. The only interest he really had was with his own ego. He believed he could make the world a better place. She was cynical about the good guys winning, but she was loyal and faithful. That kept them together. Nothing entered her life that she did not want to be there. She had an iron will. Jack both admired her for that and was repelled by it. Being married to a Margaret Thatcher was no picnic, he would say, while admiring the Iron Lady's strength. Her love for him blinded her to what she considered his egotism and his other flaws and quirks. His father had warned him, "Two rules, Jackie boy. Never ever agree with a friend who leaves his girlfriend and puts her down. They'll get back together and blame you. And one other thing, never touch another guy's girlfriend ever." He never cheated on her, and he never put her down, even after the divorce. But Rachel ignored... Well, I can go on. I don't want to read anymore, because then you won't have to buy the book. I want you to compare the writing in Abuse of Power in that particular page to anything that's on the market today, and tell me if it's not better. Florida. Eileen, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I'm reading your book. I love it. I feel like I know you from reading it. Is this autobiographical somewhat?
No, there's not a shred of autobiographical material in the book other than the dog, Eddie, who reminds me of Teddy.
Well, how about the places that you go to, the ones on the water? I mean, I'm going to...
No, I never go to Fisherman's Wharf. It's the Redneck Riviera, and I don't go there. So that's not real either.
All of that kind of book, and yours is probably the best I've read in a long, long time.
Do you read novels in general, Eileen?
Absolutely. And I like the terrorists and the kind with the, all kinds of plots.
See, this is a book that women will read. Men don't read books. Real men don't read books. Guys just belch and drink beer. They don't read books.
He does that after he reads it.
All they do is belch and rub their stomach and drink beer. They don't read novels. But it's the women who really, truthfully, it's an interesting thing. Even though it's sort of a male-oriented book, it's really written in a way that women will like the characters, I think. Isn't he a handsome, wonderful guy, Jack?
Well, I think he's you, a little younger.
No. I'm just such a good artist that you would think it's me, but it isn't. Isn't his friend Tony Antonori an appealing character as well?
Pardon me?
Tony, his friend Tony. Don't you like him as well?
Yes, I love Tony. Yes, he's more, and he's always there for him. I like that.
Yeah, you go. See, like, guys used to be like that for each other.
Now it's as though they
work for General Electric with each other. Eileen, let me ask you this. How far along are you in the book?
I'm getting to it's like part one and part two. I think I'm starting part two when he's going to go to Europe.
Oh, you are in for a ride. The book now speeds up like a roller coaster. I'm sending you another copy, a free copy of Abuse of Power to give to your favorite liberal husband. Men won't read it. They'll probably buy it and carry it around, but men won't read it. Do men read books? I don't know if men read anymore. It's an interesting question. They're so busy worrying about making a living, as they should be. Do they have time for fiction? Well, women find time for fiction because they relax reading it. It's a very interesting mind-body thing. Who reads fiction? I don't even know the demographics of it. New York, Paula, you see, it's all women who are calling. I have 38 women listeners amongst my 8 to 10 million listeners across America, and all 38 women bought the book. Look at that change. Paula in New York from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm one of the 38 women, and I got your book because I put it on reserve at Barnes & Noble. But I want to tell you, when I went in to pick it up, I looked at the counter to see where your book was, and it was lying down, and there were only 4 copies out. So when I got to the counter to get the one that I had on reserve, I said, you know, I want to buy some more for Christmas gifts. How many do you have? So she sent somebody over to look, and she said, just what's out there. So I don't know if that's according to what your publisher...
I don't know whether that means the book sold or they didn't order enough. I have no idea. But, you know, you raise an interesting point. This is the month of September already. The middle of September, it's very close to people thinking about Christmas gifts. It would make a heck of a gift. I hate to start talking about it, or I'll have to play some Christmas music. But I'll tell you what, because I'm giving books away this week and next, so I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. It's The Women Who Will Change America. I've told you that before. Did I ever tell why I said that years ago? Remember I once sent to you, it's women who will... This is before Sarah Palin. Remember before she came along, there were really no women that we could have faith in the political structure? I mean, don't bring up Hillary Clinton, please. A fake poll came out. If you read the poll, it's most popular politician in the world. What rubbish. Here's a poll that she funded, in my estimation. It says based on a sampling of 974 adults. What does that mean? What adults? They all work for her. Adults where? In the Beltway. Adults who don't vote. Adults in Mexico. Adults in Portugal. That's such nonsense. She puts out a poll to make herself look more popular. But putting that aside, long before Sarah Palin came along, I said on this show maybe 10 years ago that women will save the country, I believe. Why did I say it? Several decades ago, children who had cancer obviously were hospitalized, and they were put on the hospital diet at that time. The children were dying in the hospitals, and the mothers were coming in. Some of them, this is when I was in the nutrition field, I learned this, and they were saying to the doctors, doctor, my child is not dying of cancer. They're dying of starvation. The doctor, of course, patronized the mother. Oh, there, little lady. You don't know very much, no. You leave it to us. We're the experts here. We know just what we're doing, why that hospital diet is super. Of course, the doctor was a dunce with regard to nutrition at that time. And in fact, the children were dying of starvation. But it took the mothers, who had a better instinct for survival than the doctors, particularly with their own children, to see that the children were not dying of cancer, they were dying of starvation. And that led to a change, in to some extent, in the hospital diet. Today it's, of course, very, very far from where it should be. It's still quite deficient in the most important nutrients for survival. We know that. I mean, Jell-O in a hospital. Are you kidding me? Well, that's an example. Milk for a cancer patient? Are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? Well, that's what they do, the four food groups. But it's better than it was. So I extrapolated from that particular situation with cancer in children and mothers to say to you that it's going to be the mothers of America who saved this country. Now, we've had some very fine women come along, like Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann. I will tell you right now that the attack on Sarah Palin from the vermin in the media is at a level I've never seen in my entire life. I'm not a big fan of Sarah Palin for president. I told you I don't think she should run. But the vicious, disgusting attacks by these hateful anti-women people in the media is something I cannot believe would be going on, especially with their crocodile tears for things female. Every other day they're talking about women, and women are not making an equal amount of money, and women are oppressed, and women this and women that. So now you have two viable women candidates, and what do they do, the vermin? They attack these two viable women candidates because they're conservatives. So believe me, this is a new experience for me. Let's have a little rock and roll on the Savage Nation. And, oh, here's a good caller. Well, Speedo I've always liked. That's a nice song. Too old for Speedo already. But play it, all right, play it. Turn it off. Nothing moves me anymore. I 9 months it took me to wait for this day on Tuesday to see my book published, my novel. And it's over, meaning the day came and went, right? You ever like look forward to a date in your life? And it's like, whether it be a very important date, right? 9 months it was like pushing a boulder up a mountain. This was the myth of Sisyphus. I rolled the boulder up to the mountain. I, at the end, didn't think I could get the boulder there over the to the top. And, man, it went rolling down the other side with great velocity. And now I'm empty. So what does Sisyphus have to do? I have to walk down the other side of the mountain to write another book. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You got some well-funded folks which have gone on, you know, they organized after Barry Goldwater was devastated. They came up with an absurd right-wing philosophy based on Ayn Rand's philosophy. That philosophy is about is essentially you are on your own. And to be on your own
means... subway. You're nothing but a strap hanger from Brooklyn with antiquated socialist ideology, Senator Bernie Sanders. He's our whipping boy on the Savage Nation, the most comedic a senator in the existing 400 group of, in the Congress, rather. There's nobody more preposterously funny than Bernie Sanders, independent socialist from Brooklyn, who went to Vermont and convinced the fools in Vermont that he's on their side. Every day he gives out this rubbish, right-wing extremists. Now he's attacking Ayn Rand and Goldwater. And he says the wealthy are doing better than ever, and he doesn't mention General Electric, Jeffrey Immelt, all of the corporate jets that landed at Martha's Vineyard in August so that the president could come there and find out what they wanted from him. How can you believe a word any of these people say? How? Play a little more Bernie. Give me another Bernie, any Bernie Sanders.
I have to respect their honesty in saying it. That is their politics. That is what they believe. Mm-hmm. Forget about Medicare. Right-wing extremists believe that what society is about is allowing...
Up. Just shut up. Go work for a union to be much happier. You red pinko, you. You pinko red moron. Here's a guy just given a 50-year sentence for Medicare fraud in Florida. Miami man sentenced to 50 years for Medicare fraud. How many times have you heard bleeding heart liberals like Bernie Sanders going on and on and on with his nasal voice about the poor and that there's poverty and that they're not getting health care? And we need to give him a mental care. How many times have you heard it in that nasally voice of his? Here it is. This guy, who's given 50 years in a massive bust last fall, had clinics that allegedly were providing mental health care to people that didn't exist. And he not only did that, but he did it by lobbying Congress for funds to support the mental health services his fraud scheme purported to provide. And in the video, this guy was just given 50 years, is heard saying, We want to try to protect these poor people and make sure the patients we're providing services for are well-treated. They were given no care at all. The money went right into his pocket. So when you hear people crying about the poor, when you hear people lobbying Congress for increasing Medicare for mental care, understand one thing. It's very much like the solar companies. It's all greed, graft, and corruption, in plain English. That's all. That's why America's crippled. The corruption has never been worse. Never. Never. What would you like to talk about? Dolores in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I'm just calling to tell you about your book. My husband and I went to Barnes & Noble the other day, asked for somebody to help us. Of course, your book was on the bottom shelf, but my husband took some of the copies and put it on the top shelf.
That's amazing. So the clerks are sabotaging the sale.
Probably.
Awful. So just awful. Are you still there, Dolores? Because I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. The book is selling well. It's going to be on the New York Times bestseller list next week. By all indications, it's going to make the, let's say, the top 10 fiction, which is astounding for an unknown author. Now, I mean, I'm very well known as a nonfiction writer, but almost nobody breaks into the fiction world with their first book. It's almost unheard of. But thanks to you, the audience, it's going to be there, and it's going to change the nature of what the publishers buy. They're going to buy more conservative-oriented books. It's just the way the business works. And then maybe there'll be a brave producer in Hollywood who buys it and makes a movie and isn't afraid of the Saudi lobby. It's hard to say since the Saudis own so many movie companies today. It's hard to know. They're very much like Fox News, which is 19 or 20% owned by a Saudi prince, which is why they never have Michael Savage on and why I'm boycotted by Shillelagh over there. Leprechaun Shillelagh has told all of them that they must never mention my name. That's why Leprechaun Shillelagh failed in radio, because people read right through his blarney. Leprechaun Shillelagh.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. Savage. If I had to do it all over again, would I do this? Would I be an author and a broadcaster, PhD, scientist? Would I have done all of that, thinking back? I really don't know. I mean, you start to ask yourself these questions. I'm going through this questioning period again. I shouldn't do this on the radio. Thinking out loud is very dangerous because you don't know where it's going to lead. Sometimes I think I would have been happier if I had owned a dance hall and every night there was music and a kind of happy environment. And, I mean, I would be just as intelligent as I am. I wouldn't be as educated to what's going on, but I mean, maybe I wouldn't be as agitated by it, right? Maybe I should just buy a dance hall right now and have dances every night to go to. I don't want to own a restaurant. A lot of celebrities, like, you know, movie stars went into that business. They all lost their shirts. It couldn't be a worse business to go into. I have friends in the business. They all tell me it's a cash business. You're only a meal away from disaster, managing staff and the thievery. It's a hard business. I don't know how people do restaurants. I really don't. I admire them. If I try to cook myself a meal at night, or myself and Mrs. S, right? I can't even, like, get everything in order at the right time to put out the, you know what I'm saying? Like, everything should come out the same minute. How do they do it for a table of eight in a dining room of 300? I don't understand it. It's an amazing skill. And then my friend owns North Beach Restaurant in North Beach. I haven't been there in a while, but I'll throw a plug ski at him. And he has a sign in his kitchen that says, in the kitchen, it hangs in the kitchen, it says, hot means hot, cold means cold. Because you go in a restaurant, I mean, right? You want, okay? I don't know how they do it. How do they figure it out? I don't get it. Complicated. So I wouldn't want to be in the restaurant business. A bar and music, yes. You hire a band and you see people happy. I'm not going to do that, though, at this stage. It's too late. I went down this road a long time ago. So now I'm going back to what I started doing. When I struggled in the beginning, before I went to graduate school, I was writing stories and plays and poems. None of it made any sense. It was all basically angst. That's what you do when you're 18 to 24. You write drivel and angst, and you think that you're a genius. You mix in a little pot, and you personally, you have no idea if Dostoevsky was better than you. And then one day you look back and you say, I can't believe I wrote this. So now, yet many years later, now look at this. I write a novel, and it's going to be a bestseller. That's a big deal, but it's not going to change me inside. But you have helped me make history in a way. To make the jump from conservative talk show to fictionalist, big deal. So you have to understand I'm a little kind of involved with the book, and I can't stop talking about it, mixed in with the politics. You'll have to forgive me for a few days. This is the way it is. And I'm giving out free copies of my novel, Abuse of Power, to the 38 women listeners who I have across America. I think 32 of them have gotten the book. There's room for six. That's my tagline. It's very funny, actually. With an audience of 310 stations, 8 to 10 million listeners, I joke that there's 38 women listeners. I don't know how many there are, but look, talk radio is primarily men. The demographic of talk radio is primarily men. Unfortunately, men don't read. Real men don't read. They make quiche. Tampa, Florida, Frederick, Elisa in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you. I highly disagree. Real men do still read books.
How do you know?
How do I know? My husband's a real man, and he reads very prolifically.
He does. Okay, but what type of book does he read? H&R Block tax manuals or what?
No, actually, one of his favorite books or series that he reads quite often, I don't know how many times he's read it in the last 20 years, is The Lord of the Rings, The Silmarillion.
Well, you have a literate husband, so both of you are readers, correct?
Yes, and I am myself, but I have three young children, so he gets to do a lot more reading, and I'd have to say it's because of his private time in the bathroom.
Well, that's interesting. So has he gotten a copy yet of Abuse of Power, which I'm sending you?
God bless you. No, we haven't. That would be such a blessing. Thank you.
That's very nice. If you stay in the line, a copy goes out to you. You'll have it in 2 days, probably. Let me read your review, okay? Because the smear machine is operating on Amazon. The smear artists on Amazon try to set it up so that only people who hate my politics reviewed it. But little by little, reviews are coming into Amazon.com from real readers as opposed to the leftist machine set up by the left-wing smear machine. Let me read you a few reviews. I was a bit skeptical about Abuse of Power given the reputation of the author. What? But I have to admit that my curiosity got the better of me. As an independent, I try to keep an open mind and judge things for myself. Once I began reading Abuse of Power, I quickly found out that I couldn't put it down. The tension in this tale of intrigue and deception was masterfully built up to epic proportions. I don't want to give anything away, but the way the author ties in real-life events will truly provide one with food for thought. Let's just say that the trail leads Jack, the protagonist, to people in high places. All hail Jack the Giant Killer, one of the most riveting characters to come along in quite some time. He is. I hope he lives for a long time. To all who read this review, I'm not one to read a book. I find other things to do in my time. Although I am a Savage listener, and when he promoted Trickle Up Poverty, I was pretty close to getting it, but I didn't. Then he came out with this fiction book. I downloaded the free sample to this book on my HTC Android phone. It took me into chapter 3. I was reading it nonstop, and I couldn't stop reading this. I purchased it on Amazon, my first ever online book purchase. Although as of now, I'm only to chapter 13. I grumble when I have to put it down when it's 3 hours past my normal bedtime. Yet I know I need my sleep for work. The next day, what I'm trying to say is this book made me want to read it. Big high five to you, Dr. Savage. P.S. My wife can't put it down as well. She's at chapter 29. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We could talk about any topic that you wish. Did we get Tampa? No. I got callers from Washington that I haven't serviced for a while. That's a loaded word. Let's service a caller from WTNT in Washington. Mark, in Washington, D.C., may I service your call? What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, thanks for taking my call. Wanted to talk to you about that great public servant, Trent Lott, that we were talking about earlier.
Oh, Trent Lott, the lobbyist for General Electric, yes.
Exactly. Well, the story is, you know, he retired at a very strange time for a senator. He retired halfway into his term at the end of the odd-numbered year. He retired in December of 2007. Earlier in the beginning of that year, when the new Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid Congress came into power, they changed the lobbying rules for members of Congress and extended the revolving door from 1 year to 2 years.
Oh.
And that was kicking in for within 1 year. Trent Lott mysteriously decided to all of a sudden retire in the middle of...
Oh, you mean Pelosi made believe she was clean and clean as a whistle and she was going to make it so that you needed to wait 2 years, and he retired before it became 2 years while it was still 1 year.
Exactly.
Well, now take a look at who he's working for, General Electric. I mean, does it get any cozier than that?
Well, let me tell you how it gets even cozier. Guess who he went into business with?
Who?
His former colleague across the river in Louisiana, John Breaux, who used to be a senator, of course.
Yeah, Louisiana, a heck of a state.
Yep, yep.
Heck of a state. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. New Orleans, very well known for its honesty, clarity of politics. I mean, didn't you long come from Louisiana? I mean, you that's chuckle true. Because you know politics. All I got to do is say Huey Long. It's like a laugh line. Okay. I'll send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. I'm already working in my mind on the next book. I am. I already thought of the new plot, what Jack does next, but I don't even want to get into it. It's horrible. I can't stop. Barack Obama visited Solyndra headquarters in 2010 to tout them as a success of the stimulus package. Now conservative think tanks and pundits are positioning Solyndra and General William Shelton's testimony that he was asked to favor an Obama-linked contractor as just the tip of a much larger problem. An administration all too eager to manipulate the levers of federal power and largesse in order to reward its political supporters. Hello, Huey Long Obama. See, Huey Long never really passed away. He just became president in a new form. His name is Barack Obama. Billions now under scrutiny in Obama's Cronygate scandal. It's amazing, amazing what is going on. It's as though Huey Long took over America. Honestly, it really is. Who's the... Tyler, Texas. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I'm a new listener.
Okay, and?
And I am enjoying your show very, very muchly. And everything that you've said is just right on. And I'm in your corner going, amen, amen. And I think...
I hear you, because finally you're hearing what you're thinking, right?
Yes.
Yes. And it's hard to believe that a guy with a New York accent thinks like a guy from Texas. But believe me, the mindset is the same. I mean, I was born in New York, but truthfully, I fled New York a long time ago. But I love New York. But the politics of New York are not my politics at all. Okay, so as I moved to San Francisco, it got worse. There are very few places left in America where a real American could live. Thank you for the call. A free copy of Abuse of Power goes out to you. Let's go to the next caller on the Savage Nation. Sacramento Annie, one of my 39 listeners of the female persuasion. Annie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm so glad to get through to you today. I just wanted to let you know you have an additional female listener.
Oh, so it's 40 now. Guys, ring the bell. That's my number 40 female listener.
Yes. I'm a reformed liberal from the Bay Area.
How did you get reformed?
Your books.
How did you get... Who reformed you? A guy?
Pardon?
Did a guy reform you?
No, you did.
You're kidding.
I'm not. I found your radio station when I was about 24 years old, and I started listening because of the novelty factor. I was in the liberal mindset, and I couldn't believe how angry and passionate you were, and eventually you got through to me. Something connected there.
And that's interesting. Did you have an authoritarian father in the household?
Actually, no, I didn't. My father, he was a Democrat, and he was a very, very kind man, but he wasn't an authority. My mother was
the authority. So did you crave an authoritarian male who would speak the truth and tell you what he thought was going on Did you crave that most of your life because your dad was too nice?
I think so, yeah. And I ended up marrying a man who was like that.
Who, like your dad?
No. My husband is actually more of an authoritarian figure. He's kind of what my dad wasn't.
Is he a liberal or a conservative? Is your husband a conservative or a liberal?
He's a conservative.
That's good. Well, I'm sending you a copy for both of you to tear apart called Abuse of Power. I'll be right back.
Savage.
One for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. You can do anything but lay off of my blue suede shoe.
It is the Savage Nation. This song inspired me to write the Electric Blue Saddle Stitch Pants in an earlier book that I wrote about my childhood. Remember when the kid pushes me and the pants get ripped? It was this song that did it. You wouldn't believe it. I realized last night I was so much older than my dog. I was lying in bed playing with Teddy. You know, he's 7 years old, right? So I did the math. I almost fainted. I realized, I said, I can't be that much older than him. But, you know, you don't know. You know, you play with a dog. You have no sense of time or age, right? You become ageless. That's why we love our animals, our pets. And they have such a short a shelf span. Anyone with sensitivity knows that that's the way of the way of all flesh, right? So you cherish them if you're a decent person. And so many years. The first dog was Tippy, the garbage can in the garbage truck. You probably read about that. New York, Robert, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. First of all, bear with me with my voice. I have a little something with the voice.
You sound fine.
Okay, I've been listening to you for a while, and what I love about you is that you're so real. There's so many people in this world that are, you know, they just flip-flop everything. They spin the truth. They talk out of both sides of their mouth. You just say it like it is. Plus, you know, I grew up in the Bronx, and with your, you know, taking a walk down memory lane all the time, it just brings me back. Just the nostalgia, and it's just, I just love it. I mean, it's just, it makes me feel young again. It really does.
Well, that's okay. I mean, when you say I speak from the heart, the truth is, unless you do, you shouldn't be in this business. You know, it's an interesting thing. I've never really thought of it this way. I've told people, don't go in the restaurant business unless you really like people. You won't last. It's absolutely true. If you really don't like people, don't go in that business. You have to genuinely like people to survive. And to really do well, you have to love people. Okay? That's a real truth. We're not talking chain restaurants. We're talking about restaurants, right? But it's in this business of talk radio, unless you're willing to bare your soul on a pretty regular basis and say it like it is, you will not survive. You can't make it in this business. Now, there are some who are Republican hacks or Democrat hacks who get through it. And there are some who do open themselves up to a certain extent. But there has to be an emotional attraction between you and the audience. I believe that I extend myself sufficient to maintain this large audience I have, Robert. And I do appreciate your sympathies. And in order to cure your voice, I'm sending you Abusive Power so that you can spend this weekend reading and not talking. Now let's go on to the next. Here's an advice caller. I haven't done advice columns in a while, remember? Doc Savage. Here it is, Mike in Florida. Welcome to the program. What can I tell you?
How you doing, Mike? I need a life coach for a minute.
Quick, fire.
Okay, I'm going to a VA hospital, Voc Rehab, and I've made a lot of friends, and I'm being offered a two side plate thing. One is a simple job in housekeeping, which would get my foot in the door for a government job at a VA hospital. However, right. The other one is that a lot of people like me, and they know I'm very math-minded, and they want me to go to school and use my GI benefits. The problem is to do that, it would take me a year or two of living in government housing to do it, although I would improve my education and...
You absolutely do the latter. Live in government housing, go for your math, go to the highest level of your capacity. Do not take the other job. Absolutely not. If you got free housing, subsidized education, there's not even a choice, Mike.
Okay, I'm 52 years old, that's why I was...
I don't care if you're 69. I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power anyway.
Savage.
It is an incredibly beautiful Friday. Yes, we are living through a banana republic-esque presidency. Yes, the corporate cronyism, especially between Obama and GE, is naked criminality in the minds of millions of thinking Americans who are stunned that the Justice Department will not act, but they don't understand that the Justice Department was appointed by Obama with a fellow traveler named Eric Holder, who of course is not an independent entity any more than Robert Kennedy was an independent entity from JFK. So there's nothing new under the sun, is there? When a Democrat comes to power, what you have is a corrupt machine. The question is, will the Republicans save us in time? And I am not a Republican. I'm not a registered Republican. I'm a registered independent. I have been for 15 or more years. But they are our only hope right now. And I mean a really right-winger, if there is one, and there isn't. Rick Perry is not a right-winger, despite what the vermin in the media and the socialists in the media and the communists in the media and the anarchists in the media and the Obamaites in the media would tell you. Rick Perry is a moderate centrist in every regard. But still in all, he's the best choice that we have, in my estimation. The best choice that we have. Portland, Oregon, Tyler, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm an aspiring fiction writer, and I just wanted to tell you that you have actually been inspiring me for years to write fiction, even though you'd never written a novel yourself. And I'm just thrilled that you've finally taken on that art form, and I really look forward to reading it.
How old are you?
I'm 28 years old.
Why do you want to write fiction? Why would you waste your time with doing that? There's no money in it. I mean, you have to do it for your own pleasure.
That's it. I do it to kind of help clarify the world for me. It's the only way I know.
Oh, well, that's it. If you're not going into it thinking that you're going to wind up a rich, famous, Hemingway-esque character, you will not be miserably disappointed and broken and sitting in cafes in San Francisco or Portland getting crazy checks. If, on the other hand, you think you're going to be famous in some period of time, you will wind up in a cafe in San Francisco or Portland getting crazy checks.
You know, Dr. Savage, you actually inspired me about a year ago when you were talking about your situation being banned in Britain. You actually inspired me to outline a plot based on that situation for what I think would be a really neat novel.
Well, that's what abuse of power is more or less about. Except it goes, once the character Jack Hatfield tries to find out who did this to him, he finds out that there's a much bigger story, which is the Hand of Allah is planning the next 9/11. In the United States, and he races to stop them and finds out that he's being blocked at every turn by people in high power in the United States government all the way up to the Senate level.
Well, you know, I was actually thinking...
You're getting a copy of Abuse of Power in the mail. Don't worry about it. I'm sending you one copy. Okay, let me read you a page. That's all. It's Friday. Other, we could do rock and roll. That's all. Here it is. Sofia, Bulgaria, page 41. The moment Hassan Haddad stepped off the elevator, he knew he was being watched. It was a weeknight, and across the lobby, the hotel lounge and casino were full of European and American businessmen, either drunk or getting there, planning their schemes to rape and pillage the country's economy as they gambled away their weekly salaries. See, that's a good paragraph. Both the hotel and casino were examples of the new Eastern capitalist vulgarity. Crowded craps tables, roulette wheels, and slot machines surrounded by gold-inlaid walls and marble floors, all symbols of decadence and woeful immorality. Then there were the gypsy whores. Bulgaria didn't hide its perversions any more than it hid its corruption. And these brown-skinned Roma girls knew where the gold was. Nothing could be easier than picking off a pasty American salesman whose wife was nearly 5,000 miles away. Haddad understood the temptation these men felt. He had felt it himself many times. Most of the girls were quite attractive, wearing short, sheer dresses that clung to their skin and suggested at the pleasures that lay beneath. Just last night he had succumbed to the charms of one slow-eyed beauty, taking her to his room where she had let him do things few women would ever permit. She had received him with such enthusiasm, such passion, that he had to wonder if, unlike so many of the whores he had spent time with, her pleasure was genuine. Haddad was so surprised and delighted by the girl that he considered inviting her to accompany him home. It was an absurd, blasphemous notion. Though it hadn't seemed so as she knelt over him. After she was gone, he lay on the drenched bedsheets, thinking back to when he was a younger man attending university in America. Like Bulgaria, there were no rules in the West, and the two girls across the hall from him, both as limber as gymnasts, had taught him how to please a woman. He often lay with them on their dorm room floor, watching them... well, we'll stop right there. Haddad had applied those lessons last night and had been rewarded in kind. But shortly after the girl was gone, he remembered who he was and why he was here. Sending up a prayer to Allah, he asked for forgiveness, promising that he would never again allow himself to fall prey to such depravity. It was a promise he wasn't certain he could or wanted to keep. Nonetheless, women would not be a priority. There was something more important he needed to do. So this is one of my villains, Haddad, in the book Abuse of Power. Just to show you, we go from San Francisco to Bulgaria, Tel Aviv, London, Paris. It's an interesting book, you know? Modesto! Ray, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. Listen, it's an honor to talk to you. I want to let you know I did go into our Barnes & Noble store in Modesto, and they were all out of your book, and so they've got it on back order.
So apparently I have a large audience in Modesto who has bought the book, which is good, and a minuscule audience in other Barnes & Noble areas where they've buried the book.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not the case.
Well, I like the reports. They're very important because it keeps the bookstores. Look, 99% of the B&N and the other stores are doing the right thing. They're displaying the book properly. But I'm getting the anomalies calling, you know, where you have the green-haired people with rings coming out of their nose who are clerks. They hide the book thinking that I'm something I'm not. That's why I'm sending you abuse. That's interesting. I'm sending you abuse. I think instead of saying abuse of power, I'm going to say I'm sending you abuse. Whatever you do, don't send me abuse. Florida Bill, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I owe you an apology. I've always thought that you were kind of a fearful of yourself. You were never wrong, that kind of a person. Now that I've recently gotten a job, I was unemployed for a while. I commute 93 and a half miles a day to work, and you're the only radio talk station that I can pick up in that commute, and I found out that I was absolutely wrong. You're a phenomenal human being. You're very well-spoken, and the fact that the enlightenment that you're giving me towards the Republican Party, towards the criminalism, the Democratic Party, and things like that, you've educated me beyond belief, and I just want to tell you I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's very interesting, but I want to ask you something. You say you thought I was full of myself, and I thought I was, what, flawless is the impression you had of me in the beginning?
And it's basically because of the New York, the attitude, the vocalisms, and things like that that you get.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, let me explain something. First of all, I do have an attitude. That's number one. I don't apologize for it. You can't get to first base in this world if you don't have an attitude. No one's handing you anything on a silver platter, Bill. So attitude is paramount to survival. You need confidence. However, if the confidence is built upon no foundation, you're not going to go too far. But if you have confidence and you build that confidence on the basis of education and achievement, there's almost no limit to how far you can go in this society, Bill.
I agree. And you're helping me learn that, and I appreciate that. Like I said,
That's right. And by the way, don't worry about having an attitude. You don't have to be arrogant to have confidence. It's a fine line, and I understand it's a fine road, a hard road to walk, Bill. But there's a huge chasm between arrogance and confidence. Most of us don't know the difference, and we put on the airs of confidence by becoming arrogant. And that's something you see posturing in Hollywood a lot. That's false confidence. That's simply arrogance based upon an emptiness inside. I'm not that type of confident personality. In fact, people who know me know that off the air I rarely ever am heard from. My dog is often recognized in the streets of San Francisco before I am because I don't talk very much. I always avoid interactions with strangers. I will never respond to an insult should they occur, which is very rare. I will walk away from an argument because there's no percentage in it. As a public figure, people are entitled to their opinion just as I'm entitled to mine. So I don't argue with individuals. I have the great gift of this podium on the radio, which is where I get my political ideas out. And if people want to argue with me, they should call me, you know. But in the real life, I'd rather avoid it because there's no point in it. I'm not going to change. What am I going to do gain by changing one person's mind when I can sway hundreds of thousands a day? Bill, I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. I hope that you enjoy it. Aaron in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to say I'm one of your women listeners, and I wanted to thank you. I've been listening to you for about half my life, which is 15 years, so.
Wait, you mean you're 30 and you've been listening since you're 15?
Yep, my parents had you on in the car.
You know, this is amazing. I've been on the air for 17, 18 years, and I realize that a lot of kids listened to me when they were young and their parents were driving them to and from school, and now they're adults. And I'm really a part of their existence. It's really hard to know, Aaron, because I don't, unlike many hosts, I don't hustle around and do speeches and talks for the money. Most of them do it because they're grubbing. They need to grub the money while they can. I don't feel that way. So I don't really see my audience in that regard, Aaron. It's interesting. Maybe I should do some free speeches in order to see the real audience that's out there. I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse. That's terrible. I have to say the whole title, because if I say I'm sending you Abuse, that's going to be taken up and put on YouTube. Listen to Michael Savage abusing a female listener. He just said, I'm sending you Abuse. See, that's something Media Matters would do. George Soros would love that one. Michael Savage sent Abuse to a listener. It's very funny. Las Vegas, Dave, welcome to the program. What's on your mind in Las Vegas?
Hey, Michael, I'm a male, and I read a lot of books.
So you're one of the few. You're one of the few. Most men just simply belch and drink beer.
No, to me, reading a book is like watching a movie, and you're the director, and you get to pick your own actors and who portrays each part. But what a mistake, you don't let Hollywood ruin your book.
Well, that's a good question. Here's the problem. I retain film rights to this book. However, I know very well that there's hardly a producer in the world who will ever buy the film rights to a book if the author insists upon various and sundry controls. Unless this author is at a level that I am not in terms of fiction, they're going to say no, nothing. He can have no control, and therefore they will probably try to ruin it. Hey, you know that'd be a funny show, Dave? Let me send you some Abuse. For a free copy of Abuse. That's not to sound funny. Let me send you a free copy of Abuse. But let's just put our minds together. If you were a left-wing fanatic in Hollywood, let's say the Weinstein brothers, two of the finest human beings God ever produced, or let's say one of the other fanatics like Spielberg, Finkelberg, Winkelberg, and Hinkelberg, if you were one of them, one of these left-wing fanatics who has created the sewer pipe of Hollywood that sends out the filth as fast as they can. A flow meter could never capture the amount of filth that is pumped out of Hollywood from these superb advanced minds. Let's say they bought the rights to the book just to ruin my reputation. Okay, who would they cast as Jack Hatfield? Answer, Woody Allen or Larry David? what would they do to destroy the book? They would turn it into a musical comedy. And instead of a man seeking to stop the next 9/11, they would turn him into a right-wing nut with a shaved head who tries to create a 9/11. And then they would make the hero into a Muslim. And they would make him into a man trying to blow up a mosque. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Let me abuse America. This is Michael Savage. In fact, that could be the new motto for the sales, for ads. Michael Savage abuses America with abuse of power. What's going to happen is astonishing. When my book hits the New York Times bestseller list in fiction, which will be not this Sunday but the following, it's based on a Tuesday to Tuesday, so the calculation will be listed next Tuesday but appear in the Sunday paper the following. When that happens and they see that this conservative has shifted formats at this late stage of his career, in the midst of the Obama administration, that a conservative-oriented story would be selling like crazy. I don't know what the libs are going to do. Well, they'll smear the book. What they're doing now is what the Soviets used to do, which is ignore me. This is their standard tactic. The Soviets would ignore any intellectual or any member of the intelligentsia that they did not want to be noted in any way. There was no such thing as an opposition in the ex-Soviet Union. It was them and nobody. So the way the left wing works in this country, whether it be in San Francisco or on the national front, and that includes Fox News, because they're a Soviet, they're an arm of the new Soviet America, in my opinion. As good as they can be, they're basically a part and parcel of the same problem that we've had with CNN. They're part of the same exact Soviet-style America, which is if you don't comply with them, or if you're on the outs with them, you don't exist. That's the Soviet tactic. And that's why I have no forgiveness for Shillelagh, the leprechaun Shillelagh. He's terrified of me. Shillelagh, leprechaun, he doesn't hate me as much as he fears me, which is why he won't come on the show. But he's not my problem. Orlando, Florida. Beth, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I just want to let you know that I am one of the women who thoroughly enjoy listening to your show, and I would love to beg you for a free book.
Beg me for a free book?
Beg you.
Why do you have to beg me? I'll give you one.
I appreciate it.
Okay, so abuse is going out to you from Michael Savage. Sugarland, Texas. Jackie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Jackie?
Dr. Savage, I want to thank you for being the voice of reason and sanity for America, but I'm going to stop your doling out the abuse by telling you I went to the Barnes & Noble in Sugar Land this evening to buy Trickle Up Poverty, and they were sold out, so I had to order a copy. So I just want to let you know that they're still, hopefully my little town is still conservative, and that is evidenced by the book being sold out at the Barnes & Noble in Sugar Land.
That's interesting. Well, nevertheless, abuse is going out to you. Abuse is going out to you. Philadelphia, Carmela, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, hi, Michael. I love your show. It's years that I'm listening to it. My friends are calling me right-wing radical because I'm listening to you. And
wait a
I
minute.
Love it.
This is great. Are you of Russian ancestry?
No, I am an Israeli.
And you're an Israeli, and they call you a right-winger? Well, what's happened to Israelis? What have they become? Well, they started as socialists, I understand. So what do they believe in, the welfare state, and anyone who doesn't believe in it is a right-winger?
Yeah, exactly.
And terrible.
When you have a community organizer running this country, it's a...
But you see, Israelis, people don't understand them. They think that Israelis are by nature right-wingers. They're not. They're socialists. They don't even understand how Israel was created, was as a socialist nation, which is why the Soviet Union cast the deciding vote in favor of the creation of the State of Israel, because they thought they'd have a fellow socialist nation in their fold. People don't understand the history of Israel at all. So Israel has the largest demonstration in its history about a month ago of disaffected bums who want the government to give them free housing, free jobs, free this, free that, and they don't understand it. That has to come from somewhere. They don't understand that such a thing as, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Where is Israel supposed to get its money from? Me?
But they are giving it to the Palestinians. They also give them. So
all I can say is this. The Israelis have lost their way. If they think America is going to be their sugar daddy much longer, they're wrong. Because even those who support Israel have come to understand that we cannot afford to support Israel financially anymore. They're going to have to stand on their own 2 feet. Unfortunately, they're being surrounded right now because of Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, and Obama, who have decided that Israel should no longer exist. I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse. Abuse is going out to you, Carmela. Thank you for calling the Savage Nation. Eureka, California. Leah, you're on the radio with millions of people. You're about to be heard by more people than you'll meet for the rest of your life. What's on your mind?
Mike, I got my abuse today. I was abused from my mailman, and I have been waiting for weeks. I ordered it before Labor Day.
You know, this can become a funny line for callers from now on. Have you been abused yet? Have you been visited by abuse yet? Have you gotten your abuses yet? I think this would be a very funny game, play on words.
Well, it felt good.
What, you got abused today? You mean the mailman abused you with the book?
I feel that Amazon abused me by not letting me have it. Since I ordered it before Labor Day.
Well, look, Leah, this is a good weekend to settle down and read abuse, to get some real good abuse under your belt.
Yes.
Definitely a good weekend for abuse. I'm sorry. There's so many ways we can play with that word. I need a rest. I mean, normally on a weekend, you know, I do a few things, but I'm going to do nothing. I may stay in bed all day tomorrow. Saturday is a good day to... Sabai, I am really loopy right now. Saturday is a good day to stay in bed all day. My mother lived to 88. On Sunday, she would stay in bed all afternoon. She's a very active woman. I'm telling you something. Rest is very, very misunderstood in this country. We're all too busy.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
So here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. Air Force General says the White House pressured him to change his testimony to favor a Democratic donor. You're not going to believe it. It's beyond comprehension. We are like a banana republic under Obama. Abuse of power is rising on the charts. Why don't you change the world with me by changing the images? Go to the bookstores and buy several copies today. Abuse of power. Libya's rebel leadership could rupture, whatever that means. George Soros calls for one central European bank. I guess he means under his hands. Danes, those are people in Denmark, elect a welfare government and raise taxes. Obama's dream. Four other stimulus companies have gone under. Really? Marine receives Medal of Honor at the White House. That's, of course, to cover up Obama's mission where 23 special forces, well, I should say Navy SEALs, were killed in a helicopter crash. No investigation. Who ordered them to go into that crash? We don't know, but Obama's giving out a Medal of Honor to a Marine who no doubt deserves it, but it kind of gives Obama a better look. You know what I mean? Nobel physicist resigns over global warming lies. Let's see what else made it to MichaelSavage.com. Did Michelle Obama say all this just for a flag? The internet is buzzing about it. The Solyndra scandal is unraveling Obama's credibility. If you don't know what it is, believe me, you will. You won't believe it. $500 million of taxpayer money gone down the drain with no credibility, no accountability. Thank you, Mr. Obama, for another green scam. Obama allies are saying it's time to wake up, Mr. Obama. You're so out of step with reality that we're losing. Here's Savage's monologue from September 11th, 2001. Banned in Britain headquarters, the outrage continues. An Asian baroness says migrants having big families to claim welfare. No kidding. Canadians see, well, a rift between Islam and the West that can't be healed. Take a look at the photo from England capturing a suspect with a knife in his hand moments after he stabbed another man in England. Convicted double murderer in Texas spared death penalty by legal tricks. On the bottom, in New York, Muslim taxi drivers are allowed to veto strip club ads on the roof of their cab. Really? No more gentlemen's club ads for the sacred Muslim cab drivers in Manhattan. Well, that's a step in the right direction. What else can they ban? Well, we'll find out soon enough. You start banning strip club ads, what's next? Now, we'll have all of this breaking news for you and more on the Savage Nation throughout this program. Abbas says the Palestinians want full UN membership. Netanyahu is set for UN showdown. His address is planned for the same day as the Palestinians move for statehood. Anti-Israel subway signs in New York City sparking religious war of words. The doomed taxpayer-backed company Solyndra spent $1.9 million on lobbying the federal government. Government. There's a twisted poll that says most popular poll in the world is Hillary Clinton. But if you read the poll, it was based on less than 1,000 people. Not even voters, so, you know, don't buy into that lie. Just a complete lie. And if you've had French fries, be careful you're not reported to Michelle Obama, because there may be French fry police running around looking to see if you're eating them. Play the clip.
Right-wing extremists believe that what society is about is allowing the big money interest and the wealthy to have all kinds of power, all kinds of privileges, but if you're in the middle class or if you're a working person, forget about it. You're on your own. And if you get sick and you don't have any health insurance, guess what? This is what they're saying. You are going to die. That's it. You got some well-funded folks which have gone on, you know, they organized after Barry Goldwater was devastated. They came up with an absurd right-wing philosophy based on Ayn Rand's philosophy. That philosophy is about is essentially you are on your own. And to be on your own means that we don't need any tax revenue for Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. Somehow it is wonderful While the middle class collapses and poverty increases, what else is going on? The wealthiest people are doing phenomenally well. Corporations are enjoying record-breaking profits.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to AmericaIsRising.com, 800-255-4199, AmericaIsRising.com. David in New Hampshire, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. My girlfriend has twin three-year-old girls, and their birthday is actually today. We're going to be celebrating on Saturday, and I got them a couple of things related to elephants because they happen to take a real liking to them, and we're going to be taking them down to Boston to the zoo.
Hmm.
See them, and I just wanted to ask you what made you become interested in them and just expand on a little bit for me.
It's an interesting question. Why do I have a soft spot for elephants and gorillas is the question. I have supported the Gorilla Fund, the Elephant Fund. Elephants have always struck me as friendly giants. They're vegetarian, number one. That's first of all. They always, there's a certain look in their eye that is that has always somehow reached out to me. I don't know how to explain it. It's an emotional thing. Somehow the bigger the animal, the more vulnerable they seem to me, and the more care they actually need, the more sensitive they actually are. And I have a soft spot for large, gentle giants. I mean, that's to start with. They're not a vicious animal. Let me put it to you that way. There are vicious animals on Earth, like pit bulls, for example. Piranha fish, okay? I don't support the Piranha Fish Fund. I don't support the Pit Bull Rescue Fund, if you know what I'm saying. You ever look at mountain gorillas, how they hide and want to be left alone? They want humans to leave them alone. How human they look as they sit with their female and their offspring trying to survive in the canopies of the rainforests in Africa as they're hunted down for their claws by vermin lower than animals? I mean, ever since I've been a kid, I see these lumbering, gigantic animals, the elephants. I don't like seeing them in captivity. There's something grotesque about putting chains around their feet and making them perform like stooges. I mean, I don't go for that part of it. So if we can stop the poachers by funding the armies that kill the poachers, I'm all for that. You know, there are armies in Africa that go out hunting the poachers. You know that.
No, I didn't. But
oh, yes. They're armed with automatic weapons, and they have to hunt down poachers who are killing elephants simply for the ivory, because the ivory trade is very big in China, as you well know. The esteemed advanced culture of China still thinks that ivory is something to hunt. They're so advanced, you know. As you well know, anybody is better than an American to the liberal. They think that everybody in China is superior to every American. Anyway, thanks for the question, David. Free copy of Abuse of Power goes out to you. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I'm going to take a caller right now from Kansas. Mark, you're on the one and only Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it is a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I've been listening for a long time. I wanted to say I'm just amazed in this day and age, in 2011, with someone as learned as yourself, who just is one of the smartest people I listen to, can even believe in God today. I mean, it shocks me, actually.
I like that. I like shocking you. Do you find it offensive that a man of intelligence would believe in God?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's absolutely never been any proof of it. And in fact, if you're, you know, Catholic or someone who believes in the Bible, it was admittedly written by man. I mean, at least Muslims and other religions, you know, try to act like it was, you know, that their word was written by God. But I mean, even if you're, I was raised.
Okay, I've heard your discuss. I don't reject what you have to say, nor am I going to here to try to turn you into a religious person. But let me ask you something: do you believe Albert Einstein was super intelligent?
Of course.
Okay. Are you aware that Albert Einstein was a great believer in God?
Yes, I am.
Okay. No, I don't know, because a lot of atheists are confused because of the college posters of Einstein with the hair and with the tongue out that they put on campuses in order to debase his image. He said the more he studied the perimeters of the universe, the more he came to believe there had to be a God.
Right. But I also believe that religion is something that it can shape you throughout your entire life. Things that he had gone through had, for some reason, you know, he had questions that could not be answered, and so he turned to religion, much like yourself. You had said that, you know, you had discovered him when you had hit the bottom. I think that, you know, like some people out there, like, you know, I hate to bring up his name, but like Jesse Ventura or even like George Carlin used to say about God, that really it's something that if you have this hole in what you, you know, think is life and you have no answers for that, you have to go to this, you know, invisible man that is supposedly up there watching everything we do and all the evil that...
No, I've heard the atheistic arguments, and it's all, you know, it's sort of hollow, the whole thing, because... Have you not had black moments in your life where there was nowhere to go? Who do you turn to? What do you turn to?
With religion, you're told that God only helps
you. No, but I'm asking you as a believing atheist. You believe in the religion of atheism, which is believing in nothing and nothingness. But you actually believe in something, which is nothingness, when you think about it.
I more believe in people or something physical than something that...
But have you ever fallen down a ravine and broken your leg and laying there with no one to rescue you? Who would you call?
There's no one to call. I mean, what good would calling God do? I mean, if someone hears you, hopefully.
So you'd pick up your cell phone and you wouldn't dial G-O-D, you'd dial 911. I get it.
Right. I mean, I don't think it's an argument. You know, I don't even want to say it's an argument. It's really just your belief system. You know,
that's right. You're not going to convince me not to believe in a supernatural being that controls the universe. But you got to understand this about me. I do not believe God is omnipotent. I believe God is omnipresent. You know, there's a big difference.
That he's everywhere at all times, but he doesn't know everything about
it. See, many years ago, I went through a whole soul searching where I was about to become a total atheist. And I'd ask myself, how could a little child suffer from leukemia like this? How could a little child have cancer and suffer so violently? Why is it that evil men seem to thrive and get away with murder and rape and killing hundreds of thousands of people, while the innocent children, sometimes you go to a back ward of cancer and you see suffering amongst children? I said, what kind of God is there in heaven with a thing like this? And I found a book on this. It was written by I believe it was a Reform rabbi, and he was more a philosopher, and he said that if he believed God was omnipotent but not omnipresent, he would cease believing because he would not accept the God that was so cruel.
I guess I got to apologize. And when you say omnipresent, you mean that he's everywhere at all times or what? I mean, what's the difference between...
I believe that God's work is apparent everywhere. If I'm sitting in my radio studio looking out of the window and I see a bush... And I see an airplane, and I see the breeze, and I see a bird, okay? These are all manifestations of God to me.
Okay.
To me. It doesn't mean I see a spiritual being walking around who's going to wind up in my living room. I'm not Jimmy Carter. I don't believe he's going to show up in a white robe in my living room and I have to drink strychnine in order to prove it.
That's all the proof you need that there is a God, is because there are these things that are present that you see every day.
Yes. In other words, how could this have happened by accident?
I think that there's many, many things, and I think you'd agree with this, there's many, many things in the world that cannot be explained by us. I think that man is, you know, pretty low on the...
Wait, but you just touched again on something you struggle with all your life, and I agree with you. There are many things we can't understand. So how do you turn? What do you do at that moment when you reach a point you can't understand? What do you turn to? I don't understand it, and that's enough for you?
Well, no. I try to study as much as I can of things that have actually happened and people that have lived in the world and experienced what is to experience in the world and maybe what they're... I kind of see it as a study that you spend your whole life trying to...
Look, we're not going to change each other's mind. A belief is a faith. That's all there is. It's a faith and period. You can't prove it. It's a faith. That's why it's called faith-based.
In this horrible, disgusting world with what goes on every day, how can you have faith in this being? Even if there is a God, say that there is a God. If there is a God, how could he be such an incredibly cruel being to allow what happen in the world? You know how there was...
I have asked the same question. I've gone right there. I'm not different than Mother Teresa, who doubted God's existence at times in her life, but still trekked along on the path of God. Because there's no alternative. I cannot take myself off this path at this point in my life. It's impossible.
You know the story of Noah's Ark, obviously. Flood, you know, because everything was so evil in the world that he needed to wash it clean, basically, and start over. You can't tell me that after all these thousands of years after that things are not 10, 1,000 times worse than they were back then. And
yeah, but who says there's not going to be another flood?
Right, there could be, but it's been so long. I mean, there's just no.
Yeah, it's been a long time. That's why I have survival food on a hillside house somewhere.
I mean, I do think it's probably coming, but I think we're more likely to destroy ourselves before that actually happens. But I just...
Yeah, that's a whole separate discussion. I want to ask you something. You've got my curiosity. Were you raised in any religion?
I was raised as a Catholic. I went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. I was confirmed in the Catholic religion, although at confirmation I was right towards the time of not, you know, of really falling out of belief. But
what made you a lapsed Catholic? Something happened in your life? What happened?
You know, I was the weird kid that was like 9 or 10 years old in Catholic. You know, if you're in Catholic schooling, you go to church probably 2 or 3 times a week. And so I would sit in church and the priest would want us to be involved. So he would ask us questions and I would be the weird kid that stood up and said, OK, look, you know, if there is a God, then, you know, why does these bad things happen? Blah, blah, blah. And they never had
yes.
an answer for me. And
all right. No. Hey, that happens in every religion. Every religion has kids who ask these questions. You're not the weird one. You're the smart one. You're the one who challenges authority. I understand that, but I've been that way all my life.
Right. I felt weird because there was no other child, and in fact, I was laughed at for even.
See, here's the thing about it. Do you do things in your life that you're ashamed of? Things that you really wish you didn't do?
Of course.
Okay. So who do you apologize to for that?
There is nobody to apologize to.
Don't you do any mea culpa saying, God, I'm sorry, I've sinned, I can't help myself?
No. Well,
what do you say to yourself? What do you say to yourself at that point?
You know what? I don't. I don't have those kind of internal monologues. I basically try to live my life. You know, I feel that the Ten Commandments are a great way to live. I think that, you know, all of the things that they list are things that you should probably try to do.
Did you say the Sixth Commandments? You're sounding like Anthony Weiner now.
No, I said the Ten Commandments.
I'm joking. Come on. Because most Democrats believe in 4 commandments.
Savage.
The recent loss of New York's very, very Democrat congressional district to a Republican, the media, so-called, is refusing to acknowledge this. But this is looking like a complete disaster for the Obama administration. To give us her take on this is the senior editor for the Cook Political Report, Jennifer Duffy. Jennifer Duffy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you.
Well, how do you see this? Do you see the special election in Weiner's seat in New York as a referendum on Obama's socialist policies, or was it the Israel vote?
You know, I do think that Tuesday's special election in New York's 9th district, now this is a district that has not had a Republican member of Congress in decades. It's got a 6-point Democratic advantage. And so to have a Republican candidate win that district by 8 points really does say something about this being a race about the president. Now, obviously, there are some things that are unique about this district. It has the largest number of Jewish voters of any district in the country, and these Jewish voters are unhappy with the president about his policy towards Israel. So that was one thing that's happening. But the president's approval rating there is near 40%. So the national lesson that we take out of that race is that, you know, the president is beginning to be a drag on candidates. Voters are angry, and they are voting against the party in power.
Is Governor Perry the man to beat in the GOP field, or is it still Mr. Mitt Romney?
You know, he came, he is the last entrant in the field. He's been in the race just about a month, and he has certainly become a pretty strong performer. But I don't think this race is over yet. I think that we're looking at essentially a 2.5-person race. You have, I think it's now a race between Romney and Perry, with Michelle Bachmann sort of sticking her head up. And really, if I'm Mitt Romney, I want Michelle Bachmann in this race as long as possible because she really does challenge Perry and she does siphon off some of his support.
Right now, in your opinion, who has the best chance of beating President Obama in this GOP field? Is it Perry, Romney, or another liberal Republican?
Well, if you look at the these top two candidates, I think that either one of them can beat Barack Obama today. And it has, because you have to understand, presidential races with an incumbent president are never about the challenger. These races are about the incumbent. They're a referendum on the incumbent. So it almost doesn't quite matter which one wins.
What do you think Republicans need to do to make their socialist-in-chief a one-term president?
Well, at this point, I'm not sure Republicans have to do anything. I think the president's doing a pretty good job on his own. You know, obviously, in a lot of ways, President Obama got dealt a very bad hand. And in terms of, you know, the economy was down when he took office, and it really hasn't gotten up off the mat yet. So I think that, you know, Republicans really don't have to do much different than what they're doing. They remind voters constantly that nothing that this president has tried to do to revive the economy has worked, and that his answer seems to be all based in raising taxes. Now, you know what? Elections are never, you know, really about one message, you know, because Democrats are going to hit back, and I am picking up certainly from Democrats that they are going to start reminding voters that, you know, that this president inherited a mess that Republicans created. So I really think when this race gets going, when there is a nominee and it gets going, voters are going to have a choice between very stark visions about what should be done about the economy.
Okay, so in your mind, what will be the biggest factor in this upcoming presidential election? Is it jobs?
Yeah, the biggest factor, I think, in 2012 is actually going to be the biggest factor that we've seen in the last three elections, and that's independent voters and where independent voters go. You know, in 2008, they supported President Obama by 8 points, yet in 2010, they swung the other way and supported Republicans by 18 points. Where do these voters go in 2012? I think it's a little bit early to know the answer to that question. The thing about independent voters is they tune in late, and they make decisions late, because while Democrats and Republicans have a lot of passion and bring a lot of passion to the process, as we like to sort of half-kiddingly say, independents have lives. And so they don't eat and drink and sleep politics like we, certainly I do anyway, and a lot of very committed activists. But so I think that so go independent voters, so goes this election.
If the election were held today between the GOP frontrunner and President Obama, who would win?
Today, I think Perry would win, but we have a long, long way to go. And you know, consider this, if the election were held today between President Obama and Mitt Romney, I think that Mitt Romney would win. So, again, elections are referendums on the incumbent. And at this point, you know, Republicans don't have a perfect candidate. There is no Ronald Reagan out here who wins sort of on the sheer force of personality. But they don't need that candidate in this current climate. The worst thing to happen to Republicans, and they know this, is that the climate improves. I don't buy off on the notion that Republicans, you know, are sort of stepping on economic progress and growth. Because if you've looked at Congress's approval ratings lately, voters aren't too happy with them either. But at the same time, the current political environment is good for Republicans, and they know that.
Jennifer Duffy, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great speaking with you. Thanks for having me.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
On the Jobs Act that he is pushing for now, that he is using the bully pulpit for now, he has drafted legislation, this American Jobs Act. Do you
exactly.
think that he's doing? You think that he's doing it the right way with this?
I do, and I think he's going to succeed for the reason I just described. Mm-hmm. I think the public is going to decide that he is right, and the Republican opposition is wrong.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Dr. Phil's Beverly Hills Estate. $6.25 million self-help guru turned talk show host Dr. Phil McGraw and his wife Robin are selling their villa estate in Beverly Hills. What am I supposed to get jealous about that? So some skank will buy it. Built in 1960, the Mediterranean-inspired home is situated almost half an acre and offers 6,900 square feet of living space. I bet it has a chef's kitchen. I bet you they serve Chardonnay wine. I bet you they eat fish. What do you mean they have a chef's kitchen? What's a chef's kitchen? Key rooms in the home include, don't you love these write-ups, these sappy write-ups? Key rooms in the home include a chef's kitchen with breakfast bar. Ooh, a breakfast bar. We don't have that, Mildred. Theater-style family room, office, library. Ooh, it has a temperature-controlled wine storage area. You can buy them for $69 at Costco. And a formal living room, well, you could have such luminaries over, as you can imagine, such as Sean Penn. How come Sean Penn's not visiting his hero, Chavez, in Cuba, where he's getting chemotherapy? The exterior feature of the home include a swimming pool and spa. How exciting. Archie Bunker has that. Covered porch, cabana, grill. Wow. Hey, even has a private detached garage. Woo. That's really living it up. That's really living it up. It has closets. Look at that. That's like buying a car with a radio and heater. You know, includes radio and heater. Separate here, his and her closets. And an intricate stone design motif in the bath. That's really worth getting up for in the morning. I mean, when you're stoned on a medical marijuana and the next morning you wake up and, you know, life has no meaning for you, just remember that you have a stone design motif in the bath. I love these chef kitchens that they advertise in these houses. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it if you're a chef. But I remember my mother, God rest her soul, we lived in an attached house in Queens, New York. You know, one of those, like a London, like an England house, like a brick house that's 20 feet wide and the lot's 100 feet deep. She had a stove, a four-burner electric stove in the kitchen. What she could cook on that four-burner electric stove, she always had four gourmet meals going at any one. When I say gourmet, I don't mean fancy. I don't mean drizzled with strawberry juice. I mean real meals, and they would be in the refrigerator waiting for you. Come home from, like, college, and I'd say, Ma, what's to eat? She says, well, we have this, we have that, like four different restaurant-sized meals. All on four electric burners. She didn't need a chef's kitchen. We didn't have a breakfast bar. Unbelievable. I have a picture of her in my old book. I found a copy of, where is it? The Enemy Within. I found pictures of it that I put in there. That's actually, in a way, what am I writing for anymore? I should have stopped with The Enemy Within. I showed family pictures, the brother, the mother, the father, the dog. I showed me as a young man with the weightlifting. How many books do I have to write until it's over? When does God say you can take your hands off the wheel? Do I have to die to stop writing books and doing radio? I got to ask myself a question. If I were a normal person, I would have retired 15 years ago. Why am I doing this? A, because the country's in trouble, and B, I think I can have an impact. C, because there's a degree of ego involved, and I want to prove that I can do it. I've been thinking about that. How much is ego driven of all of us? How much... What drive is this from a work ethic I have? I ask myself every day to keep going and going and going when really I'm asking you, I mean, why am I doing this? Should I keep doing this? Now the lights will go on. Of course you want me to do it. You want the Jesus on the cross also with the spikes in the hands and the feet. Of course you want me to keep crucifying myself on the air every day. I need a vacation. Maybe I should go to that boat in Nice and relax, kick my feet up and just drink for 7 or 10 days. 1-800-449-8255, Michael Savage. Dr. Phil's Beverly Hills Estate. What kind of doctor is that guy? What does he do on the television? I never watched the... Does anyone know what he does? Dr. Phil. How could you believe in a guy called Dr. Phil? If you go to a real doctor, let's say you like your heart, you have pains in your chest. I don't like knowing a doctor's first name. I want to call him doctor. I don't want to call him... I don't like... That was another thing I never liked. Like when I was in graduate school, when you like thought you were familiar as a graduate student with the professor where you could call him by the first name like Leonard, but I was always uncomfortable. I was the kind of guy who always used to call him Dr., you know, Dr. Blatstein, because I, you know, it was like more formal. I didn't want to call him Leonard. I didn't want to know. I mean, Leonard was killing the mice anyway. You know, it was like Lenny and the mice in the Grapes of Wrath. But Dr. Leonard Platskin, I'd rather call him Dr. Platskin instead of Leonard. He died of brain cancer. Remember I told you about the guy who said you have to kill the rats or you're going to lose your fellowship, and he knew I had no money? I said, well, I guess I lost my fellowship. I'm not killing the rats. He said, get out of here. He threw me out of the laboratory. I had nothing. And that's how I went into another field of botany, because I didn't have to kill animals. It's not that I loved rats. I didn't want to kill them. You see, it's two different things. You don't have to love rats to not want to pith their brains and see them die in your hand. You know who enjoyed doing it? And I'm sorry to say this. This doctor, he died soon thereafter of brain cancer from all his experiments and his the weird chemicals he was using. He was a pharmacologist. I know his name. I can't mention his name because the widow will probably give me a sue. I didn't like him. He was a mean son of a gun throwing me out like that. So, kill the rats or you're going to lose your fellowship. I said, okay, I lost my fellowship. I had nothing, zero. And I wound up in ethnobotany because of that. So, you know who we found who did the job, who loved, and she was a dwarf. She was a very nice dwarf, by the way, and I got along with her very well till they fired me. I mean, I don't know. I didn't keep in touch with her. But it was something so crazy in that laboratory. She would hold a little lab rat in her hand and stroke it and talk to it. You're like, hello, Dory. How are you today, Dory? And she'd soothe it. And then from the behind, she'd come up with like a Nazi in the back of the neck and pith it. You had to experiment to see what was like the organs, what they looked like after they gave them Jell-O. You know, they put one set of rats on Jell-O, another set of rats on like rat feed, and another set of rats on like a diet that I grew up on. And whichever one died first, they would definitely sell that diet to the American people. Okay, Michelle in New York on WOR. What's on your mind, Michelle? Go ahead, please.
Savage, it's an honor to speak to you. I enjoy listening to you every evening.
Even when I get distracted today and talk about little stories like that, you like it. You like the storytelling?
I want to tell you, I was impressed with the story of your mother's cooking, because my mother, being a German lady, unfortunately now deceased, cooked the most wonderful meals in a very tiny, tiny kitchen Munich, Germany, and I just say it's the chef that makes the kitchen and not the kitchen that makes the chef.
I have the copy of the from a book I wrote years ago called The Enemy Within. In the middle of it, on the left side, with Mom in her kitchen, Queens, New York, 1980s, and she's holding you could see the stove. Boy, did I look good. Look what happens to a man in a few years. And there's a big thing of soup she made and everything else, all on a little four-burner stove. There's my father, long dead, with my dog, Tippy, who bit me down to the bone. Tippy the dog bit down
my...
Oh,
my goodness. I come originally from Manhattan, and that's what our dog's name was, Tippy.
Maybe it was a popular name in those days, like Muhammad is in London today. You know, like Muhammad's the most popular name for young boys in London. Maybe Tippy was a popular dog's name then.
That's coincidental, huh?
You want to hear something funny? Like, I started talking about Tippy the dog when I went on radio, starting in the beginning, right? So I was a local host in 1994, became national in the year 2000, and I would tell family stories. I saw a replay of The Sopranos recently, and there was a flashback to when Tony Soprano was a kid. He had a dog named Tippy. They probably got it from my show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I wonder how many of my ideas have wound up in TV shows and stuff like that.
I'm sure, man.
Here I am with my son, who kicked off the Paul Revere Society and is now... See, I was showing the Compassionate Conservative... Look at this. One of many Compassionate Conservative conventions long before the Republicans used it. I was Glenn Beck long before Glenn Beck was in recovery. Before he even, you know, kicked the bottle. I mean, I was doing big events. Before the Tea Party has ever had tea, I was doing big events. Which is good. It's all a sequence. I don't need the credit for it. I know what I've done. And here I am years later. So what was your favorite dish as a young German girl?
Well, my mother used to make for my birthday strawberry shortcake, homemade, every year.
See, I don't eat sweets, and I don't eat sweets. I mean, I have a good friend who's a pastry chef, and he cooks them for other people, but he doesn't eat much of them himself. So I'm talking about regular food, not pastry. What was your favorite mother's meal?
Delicious roast pork made with beer, onions, and carrots.
How about spretzel? What's that stuff? I go to a German restaurant from time to time.
It's like a homemade pasta.
What's it? No, spretzel. What's it called? Spretzel or spreckle?
Spetzel, it's called.
Schmeckle?
Spetzel with a S. It's like Sam. Spetzel.
It sounds S-T. Like my uncle. I used to call him a schmeckle.
But she could whip up fabulous dishes of all ethnicities. Really.
No, seriously, what is that grain? What is speckle? I mean, speckle. What is it?
It's made from flour and water and some salt.
Oh, you mean you roll up like little, and you fry it?
No, it's boiled in water.
Oh, it's boiled, because I know it doesn't, you know, like stick in your gut. It's very good.
It is. It's delicious.
My mother made a dumpling. You know, it's funny. I love certain Chinese foods. Like, everyone loves pot stickers, right? Everybody does. But it runs throughout all cultures, the equivalent of the pot sticker. The Eastern European version of the pot sticker was two pieces of dough that she rolled by hand with the rolling pin, right? And she would stuff it with potato and onion and then put the dough over it, and she'd boil it in water. It was the most delicious thing in my life.
Okay.
I have the recipe somewhere. I never made it. I'd like to try making it myself.
Germans also make something similar with a potato dumpling. It's called a Kartoffelknödel.
A Kartoffelknödel? It looks like what, Bill Clinton's ears?
I want to tell you something else in reference to the kitchen. I'm trying to sell my home for over a year, and the people don't want to buy it because I don't have the granite countertops.
Oh, yeah, and you need the lighting and the granite countertop, sure, so they can not cook in it.
Kitchen, so they don't want it. They don't cook.
Isn't that, well, no, you have to renovate the kitchen. They don't even want to buy. That's a big job, by the way. So I want to go back to one German dish that I like. Do you like goulash?
Yes.
Now, that's not German. Goulash is that's not
Hungarian.
A German dish, is it? It's Hungarian.
Yes.
Yeah, Hungarians, I think, a weird thing. Hungary, Huns. Isn't it true about the Huns invaded that part of Europe and they're descendants of the Huns?
I believe so, but I can't.
Yeah, well, all right, they know a little bit about food and meat.
Savage.